New research has revealed more about the mysterious evolution of kōkako, huia, tieke, tieke saddlebacks, same bird. They're all part of the wattlebird family, which are unique to Aotearoa. Let's have a listen to the beautiful kōkako. Grey ghost. I was lucky enough to see one hopping and playing in front of me on Little Barrier Island, Oturu, a couple of years ago when I visited. They're bigger than you expect. Anyway, that's another story. An Otago-based study has analysed the DNA of the wattlebird family and made some interesting discoveries. I'm joined by Dr. Nick Rawlins, Director at Otago Paleogenetics Laboratory. Hi there, Nick.
Hi, thanks for having me on, Jesse.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. Can you explain a bit more about what you set out to discover with this study?
So this is research conducted by my fantastic PhD student, Pascal. And the evolution and origin of the wattlebirds, the kōkako, huia and tieke, has really puzzled scientists since the 1800s because these birds form their own unique family, the Caledae. It's only found in New Zealand. So we set out to work out how can we use modern and ancient DNA to basically reconstruct their whakapapa and what are the, I suppose, the geological and climatic factors in New Zealand that led to their evolution.
Now, just to get this straight, are there other birds in the world that have wattles?
There are other birds in the world that will have wattles, but the huia, kōkako and tieke are unique to New Zealand and are not found anywhere else in the world.
Okay. And, well, the huia aren't even found in New Zealand anymore.
No, they went extinct in the early 1900s. They were in the ranges just north of Wellington.
And the South Island kōkako is almost certainly extinct.
Yep.
And the tieke is not looking too flash either.
No, but you find tieke on offshore islands, so there is a good population down on Olver Island, unless it's been munched by the rats that have invaded that island recently.
Sounding good there for a moment. Yeah, I've seen them. They're at the Wellington one called? The sanctuary there. Zealandia.
Zealandia.
I've seen them at Taifaranui in Auckland. So basically anywhere behind a predator-proof fence because they tend to nest on the ground, which isn't very good. You've got rats roaming around, right?
Yeah, and my first kōkako I saw was on Tiritiri Mātanga. Oh. I walked around the corner of a track and it was in the tree serenading.
Oh, that's amazing. And that call's so distinctive, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Okay, so in plain language, tell me their genetic history.
So their two puna ancestors arrived in New Zealand around 27 million years ago. So this is before the height of the Oligocene drowning. So it's another good piece of evidence that there was land around. And then over the preceding 27-odd million years, kōkako evolved and huia evolved and the saddleback evolved. Now, we're not sure what drove their evolution in New Zealand because they have a really, really scant fossil record right up until quite recently. So we're not sure whether the ancestors arrived just on what was the North Island or the South Island or both. So it's a really good argument that we need more funding for paleontology to go find their fossils. But what we do know, really interestingly, is that the North and South Island kōkako both diverged around 3 million years ago. So this is before Cook Strait formed. So Cook Strait's only 500,000 years old. Mm. We had another strait at the time called the Manawatu Straits. For any listeners from Palmerston North, I'm sorry you were underwater 3 million years ago.
Really? Is that why it's quite flat through there?
Yeah. You've had uplift in the past couple of million years with the mountain range has been uplifted, but it is. It's why it's quite flat and low-lying all through there.
Okay. Right, so the kōkako, when do the wattles appear and why?
We're not sure when they appeared, but it's probably a form of species recognition. so you don't get confused about what species you are, but also as a form of sexual display, distinguishing between males and females, but also adults and juveniles.
Okay. How significant is it, what you've discovered here?
It's quite significant. So we've got, for the first time with this study, and a similar study that was published by colleagues of ours at Te Papa and Massey University a few weeks ago, a really good understanding now of when this really important family of birds arrived in New Zealand, but also some of the geological and climatic drivers that led to their evolution. So it's really showing that New Zealand's dynamic history is affecting the evolution of birds in many different ways. But it's also a really good example of DNA is just one tool in our toolbox of reconstructing the whakapapa of our Tauanga Manu, our precious birds. And you need to bring in geological reconstructions in New Zealand, paleontology and the like, to really be able to reconstruct the biological heritage of these birds.
Right. The story of a New Zealand bird is inextricably linked to the story of the New Zealand landmass.
Yeah, inextricably linked.
And does what the wattlebird DNA has shown you, does that tell you something or confirm something about these this form of Manawatu Strait and the way that New Zealand was arranged at that time?
Yeah, it does. It's telling us that the Manawatu Strait it would have been wide, but there would have been ephemeral islands across the strait, because these birds are poor flyers, so they're not likely to disperse across something like Cook Strait, which is fairly wide, rough and tempestuous with the best of days. So we're talking about a wide strait with islands that allows animals to cross. So the whakapapa we can reconstruct from the genetics and start telling us about the behaviour of the birds and what the past environment might be like. Just like when the tupuna of the entire Calliidae wattlebird family arrived in New Zealand, it's suggesting there was land here during the height of the Oligocene drowning.
Yeah, can you tell me, we've just got a couple of minutes, you mentioned the Oligocene drowning before. I don't know much about that event. What was it?
So when Zealandia, the continent of New Zealand, split from eastern Gondwana, it got thinned and became less buoyant and started sinking below the waves. So at around about 23 million years ago, we were a low-lying archipelago with islands, say, roughly the size of Great Barrier, and there was land in northern part, what were northern parts of New Zealand down in southern parts of New Zealand around Otago and Southland. And one of the big debates has been, did all the land go under and all of our biodiversity, our flora and fauna, plants and animals, arrive via dispersal? So, for example, Tuatara swam, or was there land left? Doesn't need to be much. And so what a lot of the genetic and paleontological and geological evidence is suggesting is that there was land here. It didn't need to be much, but it could preserve a lot of the biodiversity. And after the drowning, the southern, the alpine fault started forming, and you started getting uplift of land.
Nick, I'm going to have to wrap you up. I always love talking to you. Oh, no, we have got another minute. Man, I've never stuffed up the pip so badly. Please finish your sentence.
Oh, no worries. And after the drowning, the alpine fault formed. So we start getting uplift of land, and the New Zealand that we know today beginning to be formed.
Good man. Nice to have you on the show. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
No worries. Thanks. Talk soon.
Dr. Nick Rawlins, Director at Otago Paleogenetics Laboratory.